Hi, I'm Glenda.
And I'm Lisa.
And we are
two black moms and a mic.
Between us, we have six kids, four boys and two girls.
And we're here to talk to you about everything from diapers to degrees. Welcome to our podcast. This episode today is really special to us, right, Glenda?
Yes.
So today we're going to talk about the genocide in Israel. We've seen it in the news. Many of us have Jewish friends and neighbors that may have family and friends in Israel. At least from my vantage point, I know someone who knows someone who has a child studying in Israel in Tel Aviv. And to see the horrific and terrifying events unfolding there has just really been weighing on my mind. And Glenda and I have talked a lot about it. And I'm sure, you know, weighing on everyone's mind or a lot of people's minds right now. So we invited another mom to talk about her feelings, and we want to share our feelings, especially how you might talk to your neighbors about it, your friends about it, but especially how you explain what's going on and help your kids process what's going on in Israel. So today we've got Lisa Channon Hedgepeth. She's the social action chair at Share Tefillah Congregation in Olney, Maryland. She's also on the Social Action Steering Committee of the Jewish Community Relations Council, which is a part of the DC, Maryland, and Virginia region. And currently she serves as jobs program coordinator for Everybody Wins DC. But most importantly, and why we have her here today, is because she's the mom of three adult children. Thanks for joining us today, Lisa.
Thanks for having me.
So the reason that we decided that we wanted to have an open discussion about this is because last weekend, when the invasion first began, my husband's college roommate was visiting over the weekend. He's Jewish. And as more information started trickling in and, you know, more coverage, you know, he was glued to the TV. I guess I didn't fully understand what was going on because I was like busy with things, just trying to make everything nice for our visitor and his sister. But as more information came in, we all had a greater understanding of the gravity of the invasion and the death and destruction that was taking place. I know it's weighed heavily on me. Glenn and I have talked about it quite a bit. And we kind of wanted to talk about how it's weighing on others, especially Lisa as a Jewish mother. And I know for me, it's been difficult to kind of process because it's so graphic and so horrible. How do you process this?
Like the word process, as you're saying this, you think of a process kind of as something linear. This to me is like a blender. Like that's how my head feels.
Yeah.
So you can process this bit of information and then 5 minutes later you hear something else and you're reprocessing. But I think what you're asking, because I have no expertise on the Middle East or don't want to weigh in on that, it's how is it affecting us here? How is it affecting Jews here? How do non-Jews talk to their Jewish friends?
Yeah.
How do you not say the wrong thing? All these things. And there was a rise in anti-Semitism and all hate crimes in this country. And now what? There's no answer. How am I processing? I'm processing like a bat out of hell is kind of how I'm processing.
Yeah, I know. It's a weird question, given that things are just changing. You know, just more horrific things are happening like almost really daily, if not by the hour. I know that for me, it's unsettling and it's just like, I want to talk about it to help me sort of feel less unsettled.
Yeah. How can you not feel unsettled? Because you can empathize with hate because hate in all forms is horrific. Hate in this country has a renewed energy in the past several years. And I don't have statistics, but I do know that religious hate in its own category, anti-Semitism is like at the top. And then the next group that's suffering religious hate is so far down. I think one of the things that came out last week was, of course, no two Jewish people have the same views on any of this stuff. So people are uncomfortable. Well, do I call my Jewish friend? And like, do I say like, hey, this is bad or, you know.
Yeah, because you don't want to be patronizing. It's like, you know, and I have Jewish neighbors behind me and I'm just not really sure what to say other than I'm sorry.
Kind of like when there's a death in the family and you don't know what to say, you call and you say, I'm watching what's happening. I have no idea what to say. This is so complicated. I'm thinking about you.
Yeah.
And I'm here for you. Because that person might be like not affected greatly or consumed by it. I heard someone, a rabbi recently say, after this weekend, I realized that we are alone And he talked about how he's part of all these interfaith groups where he attends these meetings every month and there's clergy from every denomination and they plan all these feel good interfaith events. And he said, then this happened and nobody called him.
Wow.
And he was shocked. Maybe he wasn't shocked. Maybe I was shocked. I feel like he said, I guess that's what I expected. And nobody's asking you to call and solve the problem.
Yeah.
But just say, hey, this is hard and I'm sorry. And is there anything I can do?
Thanks for sharing that, Lisa. Yesterday, I sat through a conference. It's called the MAT conference, and it's really about educational assessment. But in that, it's about educational assessment of people of color and other non-white. One of the topics, which I found to be really interesting, was a rabbi. And none of this information came up during that conference. It was really about how clinicians, what competency they need to have to work with the Jewish population. Largely because a lot of hate is coming up. Well, it's not coming up. Like you said, it's been here and it's just escalating even more. And let me step back. I'm currently a 65-year-old in an MSW program.
Yay for you.
So I'm trying very hard to learn about a variety of different things. My focus will be working with children, all children.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat through this conference Zoom meeting yesterday when the rabbi was talking. It was a great guy, professor out of Columbia. And he talked about the different levels of Jews. And he talked about what happens within those, how you worship. All I could think about was, how do I prepare myself to work with a Jewish population, whether they're Orthodox, conservative, or Reformed, because they're all very different.
Mm-hmm.
And the one part that I can say I can relate to, I can relate to hate. I can relate to
exactly
what it feels like for people to look at you or make judgments based on whatever reason that they feel comfortable, which is wrong,
right,
which is racism or anti-Semitic. I was really wowed by his discussion because we never touch what's happening in Israel, but we talked about it from the perspective of a clinician working with a Jewish population. And I bring it up because there's going to be more of a need now for people to find help, to be able to talk to someone about how they're feeling, because it's traumatizing.
Yeah,
it's traumatizing.
Yeah. Whether you're in Israel or not, if you're a Jewish person, this is traumatizing. For the first time, my adult or child life, I'm in a classroom with other people like younger, but six Jewish people. And recently you celebrated a holiday. And our university did not give that day off.
Uh-huh.
So we discussed what that was like and how that impacts you. So I'm thinking there's a lot happening here, right? And
yes.
So how are we, clinicians or not, going to help each other through this and not be angry at each other, but to understand that this problem is bigger than all of us and it's systematic and it's going to take all of us to fix it.
Yeah.
It's bigger than all of us, except, and we can all relate. So you said so many things, but what I thought was important in the summer, I arranged a film screening, which timeliness was, we just had Thursday night. And if you remember, 5 years ago, next week was the massacre at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. That was the greatest massacre of Jewish people in the United States in how many ever years? 11 people were killed. There's a group called Not in Our Town. Look them up. There's a lot to learn. But the documentarian, she made a film, which is being released on the five-year anniversary, which is the 27th of this month, called Repairing the World. Talks about the incidents that happened that day and the community response in Pittsburgh. That's the important part, the community response in Pittsburgh. So I contacted them and said, I want to do a screening of this film. And that's what happened this last Thursday night, which I scheduled this months ago before the events in the Middle East, because there's enough happening in this country that we need to address this. My whole mindset around this is, so I'm the social action chair at my synagogue. I don't need to show this film to the congregants at my synagogue. Like, we know this stuff. This is the time to form partnerships in the community, like reach out and create allyships, friendships, not just interfaith webinars where you learn something and then you go away. If these people are in your geographic community, start now to build real friendships, like learn about each other and your similarities, your differences, or just the fact that you're neighbors. That is
right.
If there's a need, whether it's something tragic like this or just anything, You're there for each other already. You've built the foundation. So we partnered with Community Center. We wanted a diverse audience. And so that's what we did. That's my goal of what I do in this work, is to not be in our silo of who we are, is to have a greater community, diverse community, different religions, whatever. So the timing of this was crazy, but we showed the film. It's very powerful. It was horrific. But the aftermath of this film in Pittsburgh, where the community, the outreach from the community was astounding in a positive way. I don't remember the specifics of what each institution did to help, but they also were just there. They came to, they knocked on your doors. They brought food and rallies and vigils, and it was ongoing. It showed that we need community. Your hate, my hate. If it happens to you, I'm there for you. If it happens to me, you're there for me. And you can't just hope that happens when there's graffiti painted on a wall in Montgomery County, or you have to have already built those relationships.
Yeah.
So that's why we did this event. And it just happened to come this week when there was so much happening. So it made it a little harder to contain the subject matter. But that anti-Semitism, and I have a unique perspective. I'm fortunate to be in a, my family is Black and Jewish.
Yes.
So I feel like, I don't know if that's an advantage, I can relate, but maybe it makes me a little more approachable sometimes for other people. Like, a lot said, I'm not sure if anything made sense, but.
No, it all makes sense. Yeah. I mean, the bottom line, what this all comes back down to is, you know, eliminating hate. That's kind of the core of what divides us and what generates
it's so strange,
so much destruction.
It divides us, but if you think about it, should not divide us. It should not be the thing that separates
us. It should unite us.
It should unite us.
Yeah.
And I think if we actually start thinking that way, that the people who are spewing this hate would start rethinking what they can get away with. But as long as we're divided, we've opened the door to this continuous biting my tongue not to say what I really think, hatred. And it's frustrating to me. It's like, you know, I have class on Monday with some great people, and my class is called Structural Oppression. And, you know, we're going to go in this class, and hopefully we'll talk about what's happening and how to process it, because we need to process it. And we need to be able to talk about it amongst ourselves and amongst our friends, and do something about it. Like, not just say, okay, it's not my problem, because it's all of our problem.
I get a little concerned with this too, like saying the wrong thing or being judged because I said something maybe not in a way that someone wants to hear. You know, I think some people get nervous about saying even words of support for fear of saying the wrong thing or saying it in the wrong way, which really probably comes more out of, you know, not being fully informed.
Yeah, but I don't think you have to be fully informed to be compassionate.
Yeah.
I mean, compare it to, like, I remember during the height of, like, Black Lives Matter, George Floyd, and there were the same things. Like, now it's like, your Jewish friends are hurting. Well, then it was, your Black friends are hurting. And people would say, like, I don't know what to say. So is it better to say nothing? Yeah. Or is it better to say, this is awful, I don't know what to say, but I'm thinking about you? And like you were saying, Glenda, there are more of us than there are them. And so, but there only needs to be one very loud, ugly voice to make things horrible. But if there are crowds of people who are silent, that's how that one voice gets heard.
Yes.
And, you know, and I'm thinking about kind of about the situation where there will be peaceful protests going on in cities around here. And within these peaceful protests, there might be one sign that says something horrific, which we've seen. Somebody who's following these terrorist groups or these anti-Semitic groups will see that one sign and like, this is an opportunity for me to make my, you know, to be seen. And that's all it takes, is one person. But it's the number of people who are silent that is so deafening, right? Yeah.
And the news media, because they'll pick that one sign and just blast it all over the place instead of looking at the whole picture. And,
or don't give that person the airtime.
Yeah, just don't do it.
Yeah.
You hear me? Just don't do it.
You hear her? Yeah.
Some people probably think that they're divorced from what's going on in Israel because they don't know anybody, or that's going on over there, or that's not affecting me over here. But just in speaking to my own kids, like, one of my children has a friend whose brother and girlfriend are missing. I think they were at the
festival.
Mm-hmm. And then another, a person that my son works with, a week or 2 weeks before the invasion, you know, she dropped her oldest for a gap year in Tel Aviv. You know, this is affecting people that you see every day, work with, play basketball with, And unless you really have those conversations, you may not know. There is a lot of value in, like, you know, talking about it.
Right. Again, it's so hard to not put your toe into the politics and all of that, because I have no credentials to do that. But what you're saying is, like, you have a friend who knows somebody who's suffering. You have a friend who knows somebody whose daughter is suffering. So we're suffering.
Yeah.
And so you can, without discussing politics, and that's not even the right word, and this is so horrific, human suffering. And I hear your daughter
showing empathy, right?
I hear she's over there. It must be terrifying. Do you want to talk about it? Is there anything I can do? Yeah, there's no good answer, but it just acknowledging that human suffering, doesn't matter who you are, no matter what was happening, if you knew that a neighbor or friend had a tragedy, like if somebody was in a car accident or whatever, you wouldn't ignore them. You would acknowledge it, even if you don't understand what their relationship to the tragedy is. Better to say something. And don't say too much. Don't start giving your opinions about, you just want to say, like, I don't know what to say, but I feel like I need to say something and I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's how I feel. I'm not an expert on what's happening in Israel by no stretch of the means. And you're right. Earlier you said, depends on who you talk to, you'll get 10 different versions of what's happening, why it's happening. We have kids watching us. I don't care how old they are or how young they are. We have kids watching us as adults. And we need to show them what it's like to be kind and to help our friends, whether we understand what's happening or not, but we can have empathy. We can be supportive. We can hold our hand. You know, we can check in and not have judgment on stuff that we don't understand. Like, I have no strong opinion about what's happening one way or the other. All I know is that I have friends of the Jewish faith that I am sorry this is happening to. I have classmates that I enjoy hanging out with, and I'm sorry it's happening to them. But as a mom, I think about the children. I think about all the children. And I think we should be wanting to protect all children. I don't know how you do that if you just keep all this hate going on.
Yeah.
Right. The children, like you're saying, we have adult children, little children. Again, I just feel like you build community. You reach out now because there's something going on. It doesn't end. You didn't, like, say, I'm sorry, and then you're done.
Right.
You're supposed that this should be part of building stronger relationships across all cultures so that we have this feeling of community and that it will be there all the time, not just when you feel like it's time to say, I'm sorry, not just in a crisis. Right. And then your children see that you care about others and you care about people outside of your family and your church and your small radius. And that's the lesson that the children need to see, is that basic decency and humanity doesn't matter who you are.
Right.
We're all humans.
We keep bringing up the word community, which is making me think about, there was a time where we were a country with strong communities. I don't know what happened to that, but maybe it's time to get back to that.
Yeah.
You know, and not worry about what Jane and Joe and Susie are doing, but just have a good, solid community, you know, where you're checking in and you're seeing how people are doing. And yeah, you know, you're not comparing yourself. You're just checking in.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, how's your health?
How your day to day?
Yeah. Day to day.
Yeah. It's granular. It's like your neighbor across the street. It doesn't have to be a big, you know.
But even your neighbor across the street nowadays, it's not.
I don't know my neighbor across the street.
I don't even know our neighbors across the street.
And that's my point.
It's true.
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But we do have to get back to, you know, really seeing people, seeing them as individuals and just, you know, having empathy for each other. I mean, even back with when a lot was in the news about Black children getting stopped by the police, it makes me think, like, I remember someone said, well, if the kid isn't doing anything wrong, they shouldn't have a problem. They shouldn't think about it. We do are fearful, like, you know, because kids are getting stopped and they're not doing anything more than walking down the street or driving.
Walking while Black, shopping while Black, driving while Black.
And it's a reality.
Yeah.
And so my reality as a Black mother, I know I've had plenty of conversations with my children about what to do if they're stopped or how to avoid suspicious behavior. You know, there's one thing. So there's a Saturday Night Live skit with Kenan Thompson where they're in the Amazon store where you don't have to, you can just pick up what you want and walk out the store.
Yeah.
Kenan Thompson's character was in the store and they said, do I have to pay for it? No, you just walk out. Well, don't I need a receipt? No, you just can't. Well, what about a bag? He's like, I am not leaving the store with no bag, no receipt.
Right.
He just knew he'd be like,
he'd be stopped
and beaten up. That's just a little anecdotal snippet of kind of like my reality for my children and the concern that they could just be doing ordinary things. And now I've heard from one of my Jewish friends about how his daughter is working in Boston and she has fear for herself. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to, you know, put myself in their shoes to understand that she has right. Real fear and real concern.
And I think you can, because like you just said, boys more than girls, but every time your black sons leave the house, you pray that they come back, right?
Yeah.
And so that's where a lot of Jewish parents are now in this country also, because the anecdotal threat level has already risen. And so just being who you are can be scary. And you said something that reminded me of a little anecdote also. I was on a webinar with my neighborhood the summer of 2020, and there was an African-American woman, I think she was 85 on there, and talking about being with maybe a neighbor, a friend, around the same age, white woman. They were in a convenience store and the white woman got a bag of chips or a bag of pretzels or something, opened it and started eating it on her way to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And this black woman was like horrified.
Yeah.
She couldn't imagine ever doing that. And her friend couldn't understand what she was afraid about. She said, I would never open something right. and start eating it before paying for it. And her friend was in her 80s. Had this aha moment, like she never considered it. Yeah. And even if you hear this, having her friend explain this to her, it was like, oh, right. that's what it means.
Yeah, you know? It means.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a good example.
85 years old.
Right. Yeah. And so that's, I think, shows just you
I'm
view
65.
The world.
I won't leave Iowa store without a
coffee. I know. I got to put everything in a bag.
Yeah, like, you want a bag. I'm looking at them like, I'm walking out of the store without a
coffee. I know, exactly. But it also shows just sort of seeing the world from your own vantage point, but you've got to see the world from other people's vantage point. And the only way you can really do that is by talking to people.
Right,
right.
Exactly.
And having
right.
full appreciation mm-hmm. for their view and their fear. Yeah, for their fear.
Because you think about David's fear for his daughter, because, you know, he's just visiting her. He lives 13 plus hours by flight away from her.
Right.
Right. So it's not like he can constantly shelter her or watch over her closely because he's so far away. And this happened while he just happened to be visiting the States, which probably didn't help with his nervousness about being so far away from home.
Yeah, I have to have empathy for that.
That fear. Because you're thinking, well, she's not black, so it's not her problem.
It's not a problem.
Yeah, but she's Jewish. So
she's Jewish, right.
So she has a level of hate coming at her.
She has her own kind of target.
She got her own kind of target.
Yeah.
Right? So, and she's not built, or she doesn't have, or maybe he doesn't know if she has a community around her that's going to help support her.
Right.
So I understand his fear from that perspective, largely because I think it's a motherhood. So you get it. The initial reaction was probably like, well, she ain't going to get shot.
She's not going to get stopped.
She's not going to get stopped. What are you talking about? But,
and I think, too, we have to remember there's hate crime, there's hate incidents, and there are the microaggressions that just her being looked at or little comments made, and the microaggressions for all of the marginalized people don't get reported.
Yes.
But they can just multiply and compound, and they can be as devastating as damaging.
There's a lot of studies on the impact of that on mental health.
Right.
And kids right now, the mental health levels and suicide levels for young adults, children and young adults, it's higher than anyone's ever seen in the United States. And this situation that's happening in Israel that is impacting people in the United States also, because you see people marching, you see flags, people have picked sides, and all this is traumatizing. So that's just an increase in mental health. And so again, we need a community to come together to wrap our arms around and say, let us all help each other through this period of time.
Yeah.
And not to ignore the deaths occurring over there. There are Israeli deaths. There are Palestinian deaths. Any death
is bad.
Is horrible.
Yes.
And so not going there, but just acknowledging that.
Yes.
Yes. So how do we talk to our kids? And hate just, you know, it emanates in so many forms. Obviously, the most egregious murder, genocide, but even bullying. I can't avoid the cliche of, you know, we've got to love one another.
Yeah.
And it sounds so simple.
It should be so simple. Right. Can't say this to even adult children. Let's turn off social media. Let's start there.
Oh,
social media has its part in some fashion, but so much of it is harmful. And right now, the news, like we were saying earlier, the headlines change every 5 minutes. So if you turn on the news trying to become educated and you catch something and that's what you go with in your brain. Come back 30 minutes later, it's different. And so we'd said this earlier, there was a quote, do not be intimidated by confident ignorance. And that's what happens is you feel small because somebody says something and it sounds so credible because of the way they say it, but maybe they don't know what they're talking about, but they're trying to push their agenda.
Yeah.
So you got to explain to your children, I don't know what you explained. It said, you'll hear a lot of things out there.
Yeah.
And even experts will say things and come to me.
Right.
Talk to me.
Right.
I don't know what the answer is either, but we can hash it out. We can talk about how it makes you feel,
right,
how you can respond on an emotional level, because on an intellectual level, it's just a battleground of wrong.
You know?
I think that's great advice. You know, come to me and let's talk it out.
And I think we need to watch our kids now.
Yeah.
You know, young adults, older adults, you know, I mean, I think we've got to just keep an eye out. But Lisa, because you shared that story about your friend's mother who's 80, and whether your child is 60 or 6.
Yeah, my friend was in Israel and was supposed to be coming back on a certain day. Then this happened and flight was canceled, got a flight to another country, flight was canceled, got a flight to a third country, flight was canceled, delayed. She finally got on a plane and all of us, we call ourselves the village, like all of her family and a few of us, and we're just tracking this plane. You know, you watch that little plane across.
Right.
And it finally touched down in New York yesterday. And I texted her mom and I said, your babies are always your babies.
Yes.
And, you know, she sent back the I'm bawling emoji because it's right. She's 80, her daughter's 60, but that's her baby.
Yeah, right. And right.
Yeah, your babies are
always your babies.
I get clapped.
I love that.
My kids all the time. Like I send them this text one day and says, I don't care how old you are, 50 to 70. I want to know where you are.
Call me.
I want to know how you're doing. I don't care if you're in Seoul, Korea. I don't care if you're like having a good old time in Portugal. You better send me a text. You better let me know or else I'm going to be on a plane.
Because what I'm assuming, if I haven't heard from you.
That's right. Exactly. I used to tease and say, yeah, when you turn 18, you got 90 days to get out. And they would just look at me and say, yeah, right. Right. Because they don't stop being your child because they turn 18 or 21.
And they still look to how you respond to things.
Yes. Yeah. My kids tell me to stay off social media.
Probably a good idea.
Yeah. They're like, oh my God, you're on TikTok again. Shouldn't you be doing your homework?
Yeah,
the tables have turned. They bust out laughing. Yeah, we didn't have TikTok in my day. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah. So I guess just keep a pulse on what's going on in your family and your children.
And your extended family and your neighborhood family. Yes.
And your neighborhood family. It's just pretty fundamental in the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe the universe is trying to force us back into looking out for your communities. And
that's
your
right.
And your friends. And sometimes they send us little messages and we don't listen. And then we get a big message and we're like, okay, let me.
What are we going to do with this message?
Yeah, what are we going to do with this? Let's do something about it. Let's not just pretend like, oh, you know, let's just go away. Because the past couple of years, nothing has really gone away.
Yeah.
No. Well, so Lisa, thank you so much for coming and hanging out.
Yes.
This is my first time meeting Lisa. I'm in a room with two Lisas. I don't know.
Yeah. Right? How does that feel?
I feel empowered.
It's a very small room. Yeah.
Small room, but big conversation.
Exactly.
Right.
Thank you so much for inviting me to do this.
Absolutely.
Well, no, it's our pleasure. Thank you.
So we want to thank Lisa Channon Hedgepeth for joining us today. And thank you for checking out our podcast. Be sure to check us out on our website, www.twoblackmomsandamic.com, where we hope that you will subscribe. You can also hear this and our other podcasts on Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Audible, and Podchaser. If you like what you hear, we hope you'll give us a great review.
Hey. Thanks for joining us today. This is Glenda.
And this is Lisa.
Two Black Moms and a Mic, and we're signing off.